Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dominic, we made it all the way through this grueling four-day work week. We made it to the weekend. Damn near, man. We got a Friday show and then on to the partying I expect this weekend.
Happy Friday to you, Crudy Evan, on the board, our fair audience, TGIF, baby.
And a big football weekend as well. The Packers kick off this weekend. Very excited about that.
Oh, Packers, Vikings. Uh-oh.
The beginning of the championship season, Dom. It begins anew. Yeah. Dom, we got a big show for Friday, a really big show, quite frankly. We've got Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chairman Ben Wickler. He's coming along in like 25 minutes, Dom. Be here soon. Also, our good friend Pat Wrightlow. He is the editor of the Up North News. And Pat is also the host of the Up North News show. And if you don't hear Pat, mornings, 8 to 11 a.m. in your market, you could always stream them. You could use the WXEO Bull Falls Radio on the TuneIn app, or you could go to the Devil Radio app. I think we're calling it the Civic app these days, but you know it's the Devil Radio app. And find the code channel for the Bull Falls Radio and listen to them there. And Dom, coming soon, more and more channels on the formerly Devil Radio app.
So, I can't wait.
Yeah, coming soon next week. Going to be a big week for this little entity. But the Devil's Advocates, man, we're kind of a big deal each and every day. So Pat Wrightlow, our big deal buddy, joining us at 5:30. You can always be a part. You, our fair audience, at 844-967-2789. Got Evan in the world headquarters of Devil Radio here in Madison. He is lightly screening your calls. But, Dom, I rarely do this. I defer to you for the very first grievance of the week of the Friday afternoon. My buddy, the floor is yours.
Oh, man, I got to tell you, Crudy, I thought yesterday we got it all out of our system, right? Queen Elizabeth is dead, long live the queen, right? All of that, all the pomp and circumstances and history and arguments that I've had with you and some friends outside of the show about this, you know, royalty and all that, and which of course I take some umbrage with. But yes, Kurt, you have something
well,
to say?
Well, only that I did hear a complaint, you know, the fact that the British would suddenly try to make a man a queen.
Yeah, right away. The Irish
Charles
response.
The third
Irish
is the
Twitter
new queen,
last.
Right?
Have you seen any of the Irish Twitter, man? He thought I was harsh yesterday. Man, the Irish Twitter, they went off. Pretty entertaining. But I thought, you know, we'll put this behind us. You know, grandmotherly old type passed on. You know, condolences to the family, so on and so forth. But, you know, kill the monarchy. I'm fine with that. But today, just what I thought, we had put it behind us and we're going to focus back on, you know, democracies and republics and, you know, representation and people being equal, all those kinds of wonderful things.
The queen is dead. Long live the king.
Oh, then the king. King Chucky. Heidi ho, I'm your friend at the end. King Chucky comes out and he gives his first king speech. And what happens here in the United States of America? ABC, CBS, NBC, they broadcast this live? What? The same broadcasters that would not show the president, the elected president of the United States, calling alarm, calling attention to the danger of the fascism, of the maggots. They didn't play that, but they played King Chucky today?
Well, Dom, the networks made a very logical conclusion to exclude the primetime speech of Joe Biden last week because, of course, Dom, you can't preempt the reruns of Young Sheldon or press your luck, or what was it? Law and Order, Tom. Law and Order. Yeah. Right? They didn't want to preempt their rerun. So, you know, I'm sure that was the reason. Today, they probably had nothing of importance going on these networks.
The decline of Western civilization will be televised unless there's a rerun of Law and Order. But not only that, Crudy, I also saw Days of Our Lives. East Coast fans of Days of Our Lives were not happy that the final few moments of the last episode to air on NBC was interrupted by a live speech from King Chucky following the death of his mom.
They preempted the very final episode of Days of Our Lives, Dom?
Can you
like sand
it?
Through the hourglass?
I mean, what are you talking about, man? Meg Ryan, she's got to be mad. Apparently, Days of Our Lives is moving over to the streaming Peacock-only app, so you're not going to get it on broadcast. But who cares if they're going to preempt it to play King Chucky, but they're not going to preempt it to show your president sounding the alarm, a very reasonable alarm of the fascist and the violence that's coming, that has already occurred, that will probably come with the maggots, but they play King Chucky. I just find that terribly, terribly ironic.
Well, doesn't a King Trump a president, Don? Isn't a president around a Jack level? I'm not quite sure in the whole, you know, deck of cards and all, where the president
falls. I think once we won the Revolutionary War, we don't do that anymore. I just don't get it, man. Why are people bending over backwards for the monarchy? It's just so weird, people. And we have actual issues from actual, you know, elected officials. I don't know, like the president talking to the country about something that's very dear to his heart, should be dear to all of our hearts. The danger that the democracy is fracturing. The big lie permeates like a cancer. It's driven by guys like Trump and his acolytes like Bannon, right?
But no, the broadcasters can't play that. But some king from some other country, that's important. Terrible, terrible, terrible.
Are you done ranting, fella?
I guess I'll stop now.
Let me talk about the woman that should have been queen or president, as the case may be. I'd like to air a little grievance on behalf of Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
I found this one at the Raw Story, one of my favorite sources. Hillary Clinton offered some questions she has for Melania Trump, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, and Facebook chief Mark Zuckerberg. Hope it's not shade, Dom. The former Secretary of State appeared on Andy Cohen's Bravo talk show, Watch What Happens Live, with her daughter Chelsea to promote their own TV show, Gutsy. I didn't know Hillary and Chelsea were doing a TV show. I wonder if it'll be on the Peacock streaming service, Dom. Hillary admitted that she often thinks about how correctly she had predicted how Donald Trump's presidency would play out. Reporting by the Daily Beast. It does cross my mind, honestly, she said, but it doesn't provide any sort of solace to me. I'm so sad. I am so distressed that everything that happened during the time he was there, and then his refusal to accept the election and inciting violence, it's heartbreaking. I hope people of whatever party will just say, no, enough. We are not going to let that kind of divisiveness and disruption exist in our country any longer. It's so important to stop it. Clinton also called for laws codifying abortion rights and same-sex marriage. And she said she's newly open to term limits for Supreme Court justices. We all kind of are, aren't we, Dom?
These days, certainly.
And Dom, she said she had only one question for Clarence Thomas. Do you want to retire? One more. Hillary Clinton had one more question, at least. This one, Clinton also revealed what she would ask Melania Trump after the FBI searched Mar-a-Lago looking for classified documents. According to the reporting here, Dom, Hillary Clinton, you know, on the show with Andy Cohen, here's her question for Melania. How's your summer going?
Terrible, man. Hopefully it's going pretty crappy. I mean, given the circumstances her husband finds himself in, it's got to be a little stressful around the bedroom, don't you think?
Which bedroom? The Clinton bedroom or the Trump bedroom? Because the Trump stress bedroom. Both ways.
Yeah, right.
Dominic, a little more stress for the Trump bedroom. He might be feeling a little inadequate these days. You know, he had this lawsuit. Donald Trump sued, like, Hillary Clinton, a bunch of defendants, because they apparently, what, inspired this investigation of him for Russia. And so anyways, I've got some analysis here from the Washington Post. Philip, I want to go here next. Trump presented his Russia hoax theory to a court, and as the headline says, it went poorly.
You chose poorly.
Apparently. And I've got a little coverage of this from the Foxy News as well. They've already got the reaction of the president's team. Let's just say they plan on appealing.
You think?
One of the hallmarks of Donald Trump's tenure in American politics has been the extent to which he remained cocooned in his own world. As president, that was often literal. He moved from the White House to his properties in tightly controlled events and to boisterous political rallies, rarely coming across critics or skeptics. No one ever told him about the Devil's Advocate's greatest radio show ever. I read on. It was also true of his presence in public conversation. He had his Twitter universe and his Fox News conversations, and he was content. Outsiders could peek in and report on what he was doing and saying and how it was received. But with Star Trek-like result, there was no observable impact on the universe being watched. It was a rhetorical terrarium. A rhetorical terrarium, Tom.
Yeah, Philip Bump, man. Come
don't water him too much. Self-contained and self-sufficient. An ecosystem where nonsense thrived and spread, where conspiracy theories competed darwinically for dominance. I didn't even know that word existed. Darwinically for dominance. So his vague dismissals of the Russian investigation as a hoax in early 2017 had by 2021 been complicated organisms, vines stretching and intertwining throughout the pro-Trump media universe. But Dom, sometimes you got to leave the bubble. You got to leave the terrarium. And the bubble boy, well, he had a bad day in court, Dom. Really, really bad day. He's appealing. He claims he's appealing through counsel.
When the judge calls your lawsuit a manifesto, that's not going very well for you.
Come back with us. Dom, are you done with your manifesto about the monarchy?
For now.
You didn't write it down, so it's not a manifesto. More Friday grievances. Yours could be next. 844-96-PARTY.
We have searched every square inch of this base, and all we have found is porno. Porno! Porno!
I had to beat off all this stuff.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Happy Friday to us all. Phone lines open 844-967-2789.
Dominic, before Ben Wickler, Democratic Party chairman from the great state of Wisconsin, joins at the 4:30 bottom of this hour, I'd like to get back to this little analysis here at the Washington Post, the dismissal of the Trump lawsuit. But let's get into the heart of it, Dom. I'll go first, and then I'll let you quote the judge in his rulings. It's really quite good. The background here is interesting, by the way. Trump presented his grand Russia hoax conspiracy in the form of a lawsuit alleging that Hillary Clinton and others, FBI officials, attorneys, IT guys, had conspired against him in violation of racketeering statutes, you know, RICO, Dom. The result was filed in a specific courthouse in the Southern District of Florida, apparently with the hope that it would be heard by a particular judge that Trump himself had appointed. Let's see if the name's familiar, Dom. We'll get there in a moment. It wasn't. Instead, it was handed to District Judge Donald M. Middlebrooks. When Trump's legal team quickly moved to have Middlebrooks removed from the case alleging bias, Middlebrooks responded by disparaging the transparency of Trump's efforts. Here's a quote from the judge. I'll do the early ones. They get better from here. I note that plaintiff filed this lawsuit in the Fort Pierce division of this district, where only one federal judge sits. Wait for it, Dom. Judge Eileen Cannon.
Oh, of course he did.
Who the plaintiff appointed in 2020, he wrote in denying Trump's request. Despite the odds, this case landed with me instead. And when the plaintiff is a litigant before a judge that he himself appointed, he does not tend to advance the same sort of bias concerns. Eileen Cannon, you might be aware, is the jurist who recently issued a ruling of remarkable favorability on Trump's behalf in the matter of his FBI search of Mar-a-Lago. Well, she doesn't get to sit on the appellate court. She's not catching the appeal either, Tom. And Middlebrook's blunt tone in assessing Trump's intent carried through to his dismissal of the lawsuit this week. Dom, I think it's only proper you take over here. As you took the L said twice.
Middlebrooks said this. Plaintiff's theory of this case, set forth in over 527 paragraphs in the first 118 pages of the amended complaint, is difficult to summarize in a cohesive and concise manner, Middlebrooks wrote as he began picking Trump's allegations apart. It was certainly not presented that way.
527 paragraphs? What, did he submit War and Peace?
In short, the theory that flourished in Trump's friendly ecosystem was that the Russia probe was a function of explicit dishonesty on the part of Clinton, that her allies sought to create a dossier of false reports about Trump and Russia, and that they used stolen data to suggest a link between Trump's business and a Russian bank. The suit was filed only after the latter allegation became a central part of Special Counsel John Durham's investigation. Durham, you'll recall, was appointed by then-Attorney General William Barr specifically to try to see whether a case could be made to cast the investigation into Russia interference as flawed or biased. Unfortunately for Trump, the case was also filed before Durham's case fell apart and before the lawyer targeted for prosecution, Michael Sussman, was found not guilty by a jury.
How's your summer going?
The amended complaint cites copiously to the indictment of Michael Sussman, and a substantial portion of the amended complaint contains its allegations, Middlebrooks write at one point. But nowhere does the amended complaint mention Sussman's acquittal. As one would expect, the focus of the decision is on the legal merits of the case, which Middlebrooks found entirely unconvincing. A quote, "Plaintiff cannot state a RICO claim without two predicate acts," he writes at one point, for example. "And after two attempts, he has failed to plausibly allege even one."
This is the amended complaint. This is Trump's team's second crack at it.
Middlebrooks derides the sloppiness of the Trump's team's presentation, the obvious challenges with the statute limitations for any such suit, and the quality of evidence offered. At one point, he notes that Trump's lawyers misunderstood an allegation centered on computer hacking. And the quote here, "What must be off limits," he explained, "is the area of the computer from which the information was obtained, not the information itself." You know, misunderstood the allegations. And another, he reflects on the circuitousness of Trump's assertions about the FBI probe into interference, codenamed Crossfire Hurricane. Perplexingly, plaintiff appears to argue that the defendants obstructed investigation Crossfire Hurricane by contributing to the initiation of Crossfire Hurricane. That defendants could have obstructed a proceeding by initiating it defies logic. While the decision centers on the legal questions, it does also uproot the conspiracy theory itself. A report from the Justice Department Inspector General cited by Trump's lawyers compels the opposite conclusion from the one Trump offers in his theory. The IG concluded that the FAA operated Crossfire Hurricane for an authorized purpose and with adequate factual predication that had nothing to do with any defendant. What's more, Middlebrooks add later, plaintiff does not plausibly allege that any White House or Trump Organization computer was hacked. This was an allegation Trump and his allies made repeatedly earlier this year, elevating components of legal findings from Durham. Middlebrooks is correct. There is no evidence of any such hacking, much less Trump's broader theory that the Russia probe was to any significant degree downstream from Hillary Clinton.
Dom, let me bring this piece to the conclusion because it gets good. The judge made very clear that he understood Trump's suit for what it obviously is. Here's a quote. "At its core, the problem with the plaintiff's amended complaint is that the plaintiff is not attempting to seek redress for any legal harm. Instead, he's seeking to flaunt a 200-page political manifesto outlining his grievances against those who have opposed him. And this court is not the appropriate forum. The appropriate forum, written here by Philip Bump, you know, is cable news or Truthy Social. You can't simply pluck a mushroom off a rotting log and transplant it onto a table and expect it to thrive. It needs the right environment, one in which credulity and fealty are abundant. The real world is simply too inhospitable. You wouldn't like it out here in reality. Don, how's your summer going, as Hillary might ask?
How's the mushroom? Good luck with the appeal, sir.
This show, it's going great. Come back with us, a fine guest, Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chairman Ben Wickler. More of the Friday Big Edition.
This was treason. This was high crimes. This was everything as bad a definition as you want to come up with. This should never be allowed to happen to our...
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday happy hour, and we are happy to announce we got a fine guest live via Zoom. He is Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chairman Ben Wickler, our friend. Ben, where you at, man? I see you're traveling. You're not driving, are you?
I'm not driving, I promise. I am on the way back from a series of meetings, back to the Democratic National Committee meeting in Washington, D.C., where we saw President Biden yesterday, and Vice President Harris is going to join us.
Well, that was a
show full of, like, the energy that we love to see. We saw it in Labor Fest. We saw it last night. It's great.
Well, I was going to say, big shot, you get to meet the president, but Dom and I were at Labor Fest this Monday. Joe Biden came to Milwaukee. Obviously, great to have the president on the ground, but... You know, call him Dark Brandon. This is a new fired up Joe Biden. I think the people are liking it. Don't you, Ben?
Absolutely. Yeah, you can see it in the response of crowds. You can see it in the clips that go viral and get passed around. He's throwing punches. I love the moment when he was like, look, when he was being heckled, he's like, everyone's entitled to be an idiot, which was just a delight. But the punches he landed against Ron Johnson, specifically around Johnson opposing capping the price of insulin, and the president has this thing of like, imagine you're a parent of a kid who has diabetes and you can't afford to give them your medicine. It's just wrong. And Joe, and you know, Ron Johnson and these other Republicans voted against it. And we're going to come back and we're going to fix it. That, the attack on Social Security, which Joe Biden lays out in great detail, that Ron Johnson wants Congress every year to vote on whether to cut it, abolish it, change it, despite the fact that we've been all been paying in for our whole working lives into the Social Security system. And then the fact that Ron Johnson called January 6th a peaceful protest. Those are three strikes against the guy. And the president of the United States has his laser sight, so like his rhetorical full energy mode set to blast this guy out of the Senate.
Ben, at Labor Fest, the biggest boos of the day were received for Ron Johnson, as the president did acknowledge his malfeasant record. And the biggest cheers, although he wasn't in attendance, not in person, Mandela Barnes, he was certainly embraced by the Labor Fest crowd that day. Joe said his name and the crowd went nuts. Let's talk about the Senate race for just a minute. Mandela's been out there working hard and campaigning quite a bit.
He has. And I actually marched with him that morning for a chunk of a big parade. Then he went all the way to Racine next. He was at the Labor Fest parade in Racine, I think at the moment of the presidential thing. And then he was in Madison at the Labor Fest there. He was crisscrossing the state, showing up for working people across Wisconsin, as he's done throughout his life. His core message is he understands, you know, no matter where you live in Wisconsin, no matter the color of your skin or what your background is, Wisconsinites work hard to support their families, and he's going to show up for working families every step of the way. And Ron Johnson is selling out working families from Social Security to opposing union jobs in his hometown of Oshkosh, so he can focus on giving giant tax cuts to himself and his big donors. It's a top versus bottom message that makes a lot of sense for the vast majority of Wisconsinites who actually have to work for a living. And that's a message that I think is especially potent at this moment, and you can tell that Ron Johnson's afraid of it.
Well, there was some rumor in the air that maybe Mandela was avoiding a personal appearance with the president, but no such qualms for Tony Evers. Tony Evers, I guess he introduced President Biden, or nearly introduced Biden. They stood on the stage together, and Tony Evers has got the battle of his young gubernatorial career. This is his first reelection bid. And Tim Michaels, all the polling says, is very, very close. Ben, if you could, contrast those two candidates for us.
So, Tim Michaels, the thing about Tim Michaels is he ran a full-on 100% ultra-mega extremist campaign. Clearly, he thinks Trump is, you know, God's greatest gift to planet Earth. And he's taken these positions of, like, the total ban on abortion. He said directly on camera, the 1849 ban is an exact mirror of my position, and my position is the exact mirror of the 1849 ban. And he was asked, any exceptions for rape or incest? He said, no exceptions for rape or incest. And he said, that's correct. And we now know that he's been funding groups that have been trying to ban contraception. And he's been in this for years. He in 2004, he ran for Senate. He was against marriage equality. He reaffirmed still today he's against marriage equality. He has all these positions. So, you know, whether or not you care that he actually lives in Connecticut and, you know, has really not been a part of the Wisconsin world for a number of years, what he wants to do to Wisconsin is so beyond the pale. He says it would be insanity to support increased funding for public schools. The governor makes no apologies about supporting public education in our state. Most Wisconsinites, unlike the Michaels family, send their kids to public schools in the state of Wisconsin. I just think he's out of step with Wisconsin values. And Governor Evers, however you might feel about his policies, you know that he's someone who gets up every day trying to do the right thing for our state. He's the governor, but he's a regular guy. He's somebody that is like someone that all of us know. And when he goes to work, he thinks about, like, how do I make sure the roads get paved and we bring class sizes down and fund schools, and how do we get broadband to farms and make sure small businesses stay open? These, like, bread and butter things that are almost non-political or shouldn't be political, that's what he spends his time on, is just doing the right thing for folks. And that is so far from the way that Tim Michaels has swung his political axe to the furthest extreme, to the right-wing swamps. And that, to me, is the core contrast in that race.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That is Ben Wickler. He's the chair of the Democratic Party of the state of Wisconsin. Ben, thanks for coming around. Great to see you again. Michael's certainly donating money to these anti-LGBTQ, anti-abortion, anti-contraception organizations, but he's trying to spin this as somehow what people are criticizing him for giving to charity and cancer research. What's your take on the position and the style and the strategy of these Republicans kind of just, you know, twisting what the criticism is? It's very mega. Do you think it's getting any traction?
Look, I'd be delighted for Tim Michaels to just give his money to churches and to cancer research organizations. Not a problem. That would be great. Just stop funding the people who are trying to track down and individually stalk abortion patients and who are trying to ban access to in vitro fertilization. I mean, he's funding some of the most extreme stuff. It's right there in his tax records. And now he's trying to play the victim card. And he literally went on the radio and said people should get out their torches and pitchforks to march on the media for just reporting what he himself has disclosed. This is all a political strategy for him. It's a kind of game to try to rally people to his side. I think he wants to take a page from, like, Brian Hagedorn, who he thinks did this strategy. But the thing about Tim Michaels is the stuff he's funded is just indefensible. Not with all his donations, but with a chunk of them, they reflect what he's been trying to push on our state and what he would do as governor. And that is completely legitimate grounds. It's something that people should be paying attention to. What do you do when people aren't looking? That tells you a lot about what you're going to do when you're in power. We saw what he would do to win the primary. He refused to say that he would even certify the election if Trump lost in 2024. And now it turns out he's been, you know, pouring money into the hands of people who want to take positions that no politician could look at a voter straight in the eye and actually admit to supporting. But that's what Tim Michaels has been doing.
Ben, I got two more questions for you before I kick it back to Crudy. Tony Evers, the selling point for Tony Evers, obviously playing a lot of defense right now, given the political circumstances in the state of Wisconsin with the gerrymandering and whatnot, but he's been a pivotal role in keeping some of this really bad legislation from becoming law. But besides that, what's the selling point for Tony Evers, as you would describe it, Ben?
When Tony Evers ran for governor, he said, I'm going to fix the damn roads. I'm going to invest in our schools. I'm going to stop the attacks on people with pre-existing conditions. And by the way, I'm going to make sure we get a 10% middle-class income tax cut. Well, what has he done? He's paved enough roads to drive from Wisconsin to Tim Michaels' house in Connecticut and back twice. He has pulled us out of arms. We have a vaccination rate in our state. He signed 15% middle-class tax cuts into law, and he's gotten our schools back in the top 10. They dropped to number 18 under Scott Walker after the massive, massive cuts in public services under the Walker administration. So he's done everything he promised to do. And then on top of that, we had this COVID pandemic, and he recognized the danger, but he got this federal money, and he decided to pour it into ensuring that small businesses could not only stay open, but thrive. And 4,200 businesses on main streets across Wisconsin have either opened their doors or expanded their operations. There are city blocks in small and medium towns around this. They got this from a governor who actually believes in people. And that kind of investment, the investment in rural broadband, getting 300,000 homes and businesses connections, he actually just shows up and delivers and does the right thing, what any of us would want our governor to do. That's what you get with Tony Evers.
Ben, Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss squeaked through his primary, but apparently his primary opponent will now engage in a write-in campaign. And now a Democrat has stepped up in that race, also will start a write-in campaign. Joel Jacobson, who's ran as a Dem before in that district. Ben, does the party take a position on the write-in campaigns? Do you support Joel Jacobson?
Anyone trying to decide whether to vote for Adam Steen, Robin Voss, or Joel Jacobson, obviously vote for Joel Jacobson. I mean, Robin Voss has been feeding an alligator in his bathtub, this alligator of the Gableman kind of conspiracy theory overturned the 2020 election. Well, guess what? That alligator is now big enough to crawl out of the bathtub and try to eat its creator. It's such profound, appalling mismanagement of political power, let alone the $1.3 million in taxpayer funds that Robin Voss shoveled into the Gableman investigation, as far as I can tell, basically to ward off what happened anyway, which is for Trump to support someone running against him in a primary. Adam Steen, like Tim Michaels's grantees, supports banning contraception. Neither of those guys should be anywhere near the state legislature.
Ben, when Donald Trump comes to town, and he did endorse Adam Steen, and so did Gableman from the Trump rally, and obviously it was all there to apparently pump up Michaels and helped him get through the primary. But if Donald Trump's in the state of Wisconsin and Donald Trump inserts himself in the midterms, Ben, that's got to be a good place for the Democratic Party to be. Strategically, am I right about that? We want Donald Trump on the midterm ballot, do we not?
Look, Donald Trump is not a popular man in the state of Wisconsin.
Come on back, Ben.
Chaos and destruction where he goes. But in a political sense, am I losing?
No, you're back. I was willing you back on the interview.
You're saying come on back.
Ben, I tell you what, let me ask you one more, and we'll try to make it coherent. I got one more question for you, Ben. Dan Kelly, who was a appointee of Scott Walker to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, obviously he lost that position. He ran for the court, did not win, but he has made his announcement for the spring 2023 election. We've got Everett Mitchell and Janet Protasiewicz, I believe is how you pronounce her name, Judge Janet. We've got two quote-unquote liberal contenders. We've got a clearly conservative contender. Ben, obviously we need a primary to play out next February, but will the Democratic Party be involved in that judicial race, the Supreme Court race in the spring?
In the general election for the spring, 100%, because what we know about Dan Kelly is that he is there to lock in permanent Republican power, the law, the Constitution be damned. I mean, there was a reason that Donald Trump endorsed him in January of 2020. Why he was talking about voting for Dan Kelly during his COVID press conferences from the White House. It's because he thinks Dan Kelly is going to throw the election to him. And we saw in 2020 that Dan Kelly is beatable and must be beaten. This election will determine whether we have an ultra mega extremist state Supreme Court going forward, or whether there's a majority that actually believes in the Constitution and the rule of law. And Frank, I, for one, would welcome having a state Supreme Court in the state of Wisconsin that actually cares what the law says instead of what right-wing politicians want them to do.
We got to let you go. I know you're in D.C. and you got to get back to the DNC, but has Dobbs changed the entire complexion of the midterm elections? I can give you like 30 seconds, Ben.
Absolutely. People are infuriated because freedoms that you know, everyone grew up thinking were basically set in stone here are being ripped away. And there's a gap. 18% more women have registered to vote since the Dobbs decision than men. You can see a level of fury that is going to turn into a political chickens coming home to roost for a Republican Party that has taken the most extreme, most horrific position and then refused to do anything about a pre-Civil War ban on abortion.
Ben Wickler, our fine guest, the Democratic Party Wisconsin chair. Ben, thanks for joining us, man. Sorry about the dropout. We'll catch up real soon, I suspect. More Devils on the other side.
Thanks, Ben.
Holy mackerel, folks. Let's get to work.
The Devil's Advocates. Rock and roll political commentary in a top 40 world.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines always open for your Friday grievance at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, want to thank our most recent guest, a fine one, Ben Wickler, Democratic Party chair. He was zooming in from D.C., apparently taking a van ride, playing a little video freeze tag with us there, Dom. But we appreciate when Ben comes around. We'll have him back again real soon, I suspect. You can all be a part of this big Friday show with the airing of the grievances and the such at the 844-967-2789. Dom, I believe, you know, with the kickoff of the NFL season and the post-Labor Day and the kids going back to school, I feel like we're in the political silly season.
No, it's we're official. There, no doubt.
Yeah, put away your white pants, get out your silly pants. We're in the political silly season. We met those guys, right? They were wearing their silly pants on Monday at the Biden rally. Or were they even wearing pants, that QAnon shaman guy?
The QAnon shaman, the Trumpsters.
I'm not clear if he had pants on, Dom.
I think they had some, you know, flag.
Overalls.
Patterned plants.
Patriotic.
Pants, yes, of course.
Pants,
very,
Dom.
Very patriotic. All with the bullhorn. No, certainly appreciate Ben coming around. And you know, some of the news I'm seeing, Kurt, is that the, you know, donors for the Republicans are starting to dry up a little bit. I've seen headlines of Republicans complaining that they can't raise money. Politico has an article out saying that the donor pool is unexpectedly shrinking. And I wonder if, you know, how much of an impact that is going to be, the money game. But certainly the trajectory that the Democrats have been on, you know, led by, frankly, Joe Biden, man. Dark Brandon coming out and lighting people up. And you couldn't tell if you watched the NBC News, but you saw Chucky today. Brandon coming out and lighting people up and letting them know where they stand. That along with Roe v. Wade and just the angst that people are feeling. And of course, the investigation into Trump and the whole Trump world seemingly starting to, you know, fray at the edges, given the legal headwinds they're facing on multiple fronts. You know, motivation for Dems is really high right now, and Ben Wickler is a great party chair. He's been really good at raising the money over the last couple of cycles, so we always appreciate it when Ben comes around.
Dom, another Friday grievance, perhaps on behalf of U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. There will be a move to codify same-sex marriage, and Ron Johnson suddenly is a no in the form of the current bill. You know, apparently he's found something to dislike about the bill. A couple of senators, Tammy Baldwin and Susan Collins, wrote an op-ed at the Washington Post on Tuesday earlier this week. I'm going to read sort of a re-encapsulation, in part an opinion piece about these Republicans running down a bad path, Dom. Republicans are in an electoral double bind. So Senators Tammy Baldwin, Dem from Wisconsin, and Susan Collins, Republican from Maine, called on their colleagues to pass new protections for same-sex marriage by arguing in a Washington Post op-ed on Tuesday that such legislation is bipartisan, after arguing that a majority of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents support same-sex marriage. The two note that the legislation has already passed through the Democrat-led House with strong bipartisan support. the goal of these two senators isn't mysterious. Passing the bill through the Senate requires getting past the filibuster. Write down that evil filibuster. That in turn means convincing 10 Republicans to join the slim 50-vote Democratic majority in the Senate to back the bill. Their op-ed was about persuading wary Republicans that it's safe and, in fact, savvy to back this politically popular view. But to call the bipartisan support for the same-sex marriage strong is at best political embroidery. Same-sex marriage has strong Democratic support. In fact, it's unanimous with all 220 House Democrats backing the bill and the expectation that all 50 Democrats in the Senate will. But only 22% of House Republicans were willing to vote for same-sex marriage. Digging into the numbers, things look even worse on the GOP side. As an analysis from the poll shows, a significant number of those Republicans who did support the bill are retiring or represent districts in Democrat sites in the midterms. See what I'm saying, Dom? Like, they're making a little political triangulation against same-sex marriage. Except those that feel very vulnerable. A little bit more here. That doesn't mean it's impossible for the bill to pass through the Senate. To be clear, if just 20% of Republican senators vote for the bill, that's enough to drag it across the finish line. It's still not clear if that will happen, however. A few Republican senators have publicly indicated support, but many are being tight-lipped about where they stand. And Tammy Baldwin told reporters that she expects a vote on the bill during the week of September 19th. But Thanes took a dim turn this week when Baldwin's fellow Wisconsin Republican senator, your friend and mine, right, Dom? Republican Ron Johnson declared that he had no intention of voting for the bill, arguing that the Supreme Court was wrong to legalize same-sex marriage in the first place. Rojo was reportedly one of the senators who LGBTQ rights advocates had hoped to get on board. He's up for re-election in a swing state this year and had previously been coy about his position, leaving hope that he would attempt to appeal to moderates by backing the bill. This loss is a bad blow for those hoping to pass the bill. Could you see them coming up one Republican senator short, Dom? And of course, Rojo eventually will be against this bill. He's always a no, right? Any Democratic advances.
This is a guy like Ron Johnson who says this is never going to be an issue, right? It's not an issue. It's not going to come up. I mean, it's not like Roe v. Wade. But then you see how they come out and at least articulate they will eventually vote on this bill. Well, of course, that's problematic. That's why Democrats are bringing this bill up for a vote, because you guys in your Supreme Court are going to try to find some way, some reason, somehow religious liberty to try and overturn it.
Dominic, the Republican opposition to abortion rights is hurting them in the polls already.
Right.
Adding their opposition to same-sex marriage to the pile will only reinforce the Democrats' message. Republicans are right-wing radicals who are wildly out of step with the mainstream on social issues. But even if the LGBTQ advocates manage to cobble together 10 votes for this bill, that shouldn't be taken as serious evidence that Republicans have become more moderate on this issue. It's not just that the vast majority of Republican politicians oppose same-sex marriage. The attacks on LGBTQ rights have only been escalating in GOP circles in the past couple of years. Across the country, Republicans are passing laws to ban books and to censor teachers for acknowledging the existence of LGBTQ people. Policies to bar gender nonconforming kids from playing sports and to punish families for supporting LGBTQ kids have also been enacted. In Texas, the Republican Party platform declared that homosexuality is an abnormal lifestyle choice. Senator Rick Scott of Florida, the head of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, released an 11-point blueprint for the GOP this year, which stated that, quote, Dom, traditional family, I'm quoting here, is God's design for humanity, and asserted that a Bible quote about the male and female, he created them, should be the guide for government policies. Come back. Wow. More Devil's Advocates will guide you through this crazy world we live in. The Happier Happy Hour is